You know, if you were invited to a high stakes poker game, right?
Yeah.
And every other player at the table was this multi-trillion dollar tech giant with an absolute unlimited bankroll.
No, yeah. The buy-in alone at that table would like completely bankrupt you before the first hand was even dealt.
Exactly. You definitely think twice before pulling up a chair. I mean, you look at the sheer resources of these
Yeah.
massive tech monopolies, the raw computing power they command.
It's staggering.
It is. It feels like they just own the entire casino.
Yeah.
But what if you could still walk away with the jackpot without ever actually sitting down at that specific table?
Right.
Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Yeah.
Today, we're looking at a really fascinating challenge. Basically, how does a small player survive and actually thrive in a global arena that's totally dominated by these tech behemoths?
It really is, the defining economic question of this decade. I mean, everyone is trying to figure out their place in this new landscape right now.
Yeah, and to answer it, we have our hands on a brand new release. We're looking at the July 2025 report from New Zealand's Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, MBIE for short.
Yay.
And the report is titled New Zealand's Strategy for Artificial Intelligence, Investing with Confidence.
And our mission for this deep dive is to explore exactly how New Zealand is navigating this whole technological revolution. Because what's crucial to note right out of the gate is that New Zealand was actually the very last OECD country to publish an AI strategy.
Wait, the very
The
last.
last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. They waited, they watched, they learned, and they chose this very specific, almost counterintuitive path.
Interesting.
So we're going to unpack the strategy, look closely at the underlying mechanisms of some real-world Kiwi AI innovations, and really see what you, whether you're, running a mid-sized business, managing a corporate team, or just trying to navigate this whole tech-heavy world,
Right.
what you can learn from a nation that has deliberately decided not to build the AI engine, but is instead aiming to become like the absolute best driver on the road.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the very core of this document, its foundational philosophy, is just a flat-out refusal to enter the AI arms race. The strategy explicitly states that New Zealand is not going to try to compete with OpenAI or Google or Meta in building foundational models. Instead, they're putting all their chips on what they call smart adoption.
Which is frankly a remarkably pragmatic recognition of structural reality. I mean, foundational AI model development, building those massive statistical engines that sit underneath tools like ChatGPT,
Yeah.
it requires hundreds of millions of dollars in capital just for the compute power alone.
Just the servers.
Exactly.
Wow.
And beyond just the financial costs, it requires access to global scale data sets to train those models. And those data sets are, well, they're already locked up by a handful of massive corporations.
Right, they own the internet, basically.
Basically, yeah, the economics of foundational AI heavily favor enormous economies of scale.
Yeah.
Structurally, a geographically isolated country of about 5 million people is just, they're never going to win that specific race.
But the stakes of staying in the game are huge, right? I mean, the report points out that just adopting generative AI could add $76 billion to the New Zealand economy by 2038.
It's massive.
That is over 15% of their GDP. It's like realizing you don't need to build your own electrical grid or invent the oven just to sell incredibly good toast.
I love that analogy.
Right, you just plug into the grid, let someone else spend the billions maintaining the power lines, and you focus entirely on making the absolute best toast on the market.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the strategic brilliance of that toast approach, as you call it, is all about speed and resource allocation.
Okay.
By focusing purely on adoption, a country, or frankly, any business listening right now, can rapidly realize productivity benefits across their entire economy without bearing those massive, crushing R&D costs.
Oh, because R&D takes forever.
Exactly. You see, when you try to build a foundational model, you are stuck in this 5 or 10 year development cycle just to reach parity with the big guys.
And by then, they've moved on.
Right. So New Zealand is saying, let's skip that. They take the cutting-edge foundations built globally and focus their finite resources on niche, high-value applications where they already possess a deep competitive advantage.
Which naturally makes you wonder what this actually looks like in practice. Because, you know, policy documents can read a bit dry.
Oh, sure.
But when you look at the mechanics of what New Zealand is actually doing with AI, it gets incredibly concrete. Like, let's look at agriculture, which is a massive part of their export economy.
Huge part, yeah.
The strategy highlights this company called Halter, which is a $1 billion agritech unicorn. They use AI wearables for dairy and beef farming. And it's not just like a step counter for cow.
No, no, it's far more sophisticated than that.
Exactly. It's essentially smart collars that manage livestock movement without any physical fences.
Right.
The AI in the collar uses subtle audio cues and vibrations to guide the animals. It's essentially automating Pavlovian conditioning through machine learning. So it's optimizing exactly where the herd grazes based on real-time data.
It's brilliant.
And then there's Aimer Farming, which honestly, this completely blew my mind when you look at how it works. They have a smartphone app where a farmer just takes a 5-second video of a field, even offline, and the AI instantly estimates the pasture mass.
And we should pause on that because the mechanism there is fascinating. Estimating pasture mass used to require a farmer to physically walk a paddock, cut samples of grass, dry them out, and weigh them to calculate the dry matter per hectare.
That sounds exhausting.
This was incredibly labor-intensive.
Right. And now, Aimer Farming is using advanced computer vision to replace all that manual labor.
Mm.
The AI is analyzing the video frame by frame, looking at shadow depth, color gradients, and the physical density of the grass blades.
Wow.
It can literally distinguish between a patch of clover and a patch of ryegrass just from the pixels. And then it calculates the total volume of feed available in that field. It saves farmers like 3 to 4 hours of manual labor a week, entirely replacing expensive, clunky hardware.
And that application of global AI to deeply local expertise extends right into healthcare too. Look at a company like Toku.
Oh, yeah.
They're using AI to analyze standard retinal scans,
right.
So just a normal eye exam, to identify cardiovascular and kidney disease.
Which sounds like science fiction, to be honest.
Right.
Like, how does a picture of your eye tell a doctor that your kidneys are failing?
Well, because the retina is actually the only place in the human body where you can view the microvascular system directly.
Oh, without surgery or anything?
Exactly. Completely non-invasively. When a patient is developing kidney disease, their systemic blood pressure changes, which causes the tiny microscopic blood vessels in the eye to actually change shape.
Really?
Yeah. But a human doctor looking at a scan cannot possibly see those minute pixel-level shifts or geometric distortions.
That's just too small.
Way too small. But an AI trained on thousands of scans can detect those vascular changes with incredible accuracy, basically turning a basic iogram into an early warning system for major organ failure.
That is wild. And we are seeing similar leaps across other sectors too, like Formis Labs built the world's first AI automated 3D planner for joint replacement surgeries, taking preoperative planning and using AI to map the exact unique anatomy of a patient's bone structure. And then Elemetry built a wearable device that measures the electrical activity of the gut, using machine learning algorithms to isolate that activity from background noise to diagnose gastric conditions.
So hyper-specific.
It really is. Even in environmental management, you have NIWA using AI forecasting to predict whale appearances for tourism in Kaikoura, and Linker Analytics using computer vision to scan aerial imagery and perfectly map the outlines of every single building in the country for emergency response databases.
It is a remarkably dense ecosystem of applied technology.
It is. But here's where it gets really interesting. I have to push back a little on this overarching strategy.
Let's hear it.
I mean, analyzing the pixels of a grass video or predicting when a whale might surface in one specific coastal town. These sound like amazing, highly specialized tools, maybe even party tricks.
I see where you're going.
Yeah, like, are these incredibly niche applications really enough to move the needle on an entire national economy? Can you base a $76 billion economic strategy on these fragmented microscopic use cases?
That is the exact skepticism many policymakers throw at this approach. But it fundamentally misunderstands how national productivity scales.
How so?
Well, these aren't just party tricks. They are highly targeted solutions to New Zealand's specific geographical and economic challenges. A 15% bump in GDP doesn't happen from a government inventing one giant monolithic super app.
Right.
It happens from thousands of small compounding efficiencies across their primary export sectors. If every dairy farmer saves 4 hours a week and every joint surgery is 10% more efficient and every building is mapped instantly for disaster relief.
Oh, that adds up.
It cascades into massive macroeconomic growth. And it's vital to remember that New Zealand isn't just like stumbling into this. They have a very deep proven history in this specific kind of practical applied tech.
You're talking about the academic foundations.
Yeah. Yes. Back in 1996, the University of Waikato released Weka.
Wait, 1996?
Yeah.
We were barely using dial-up internet in 1996.
Exactly. 1996. Weka was an open source suite of machine learning software written in Java And what it did was democratize data mining.
Oh, wow.
Before Weka, you had to be a deeply specialized computer scientist to build predictive models. Weka gave researchers a graphical interface to easily apply machine learning algorithms to their data sets.
So it made it accessible.
Totally. It is one of the oldest available machine learning systems, and the report specifically notes it is still in use today and referenced in over 25,000 research publications globally. So they absolutely have the academic pedigree to back up this applied innovation.
Okay, so they have this deep history. They have a $1 billion agritech unicorn. They have all these incredible healthcare applications analyzing our retinas, which actually brings us to a massive glaring contradiction in the MBI report.
Ah, the adoption gap.
Yes. If the tech is so good and the history is so deep, why isn't everyone in New Zealand using it? Because the report highlights a staggering adoption gap. While 67% of large New Zealand businesses are using AI, there is a massive gaping hole when it comes to SMEs.
Small and medium enterprises, yeah. The numbers there are quite stark.
A shocking 68% of New Zealand SMEs have absolutely no plans to even evaluate, let alone invest in, AI technology.
Wow, that's a huge number.
If you compare that to neighboring Australia, only 38% of SMEs over there are completely ignoring AI. When asked why they're sitting on the sidelines, 43% of the non-users in New Zealand cited a lack of expertise as their main barrier.
And that is exactly why the government is pivoting from being a passive observer to an active enabler. They've recognized that you can't just release a report telling small businesses to be innovative.
Right, that never works.
You have to build a bridge. So in their 2025 budget, they allocated $213 million for tuition and training subsidies, $64 million specifically for STEM, and $111 million to support youth transitioning into higher level study.
But pouring money into education only solves half the problem. Yep. I mean, if you are listening to this right now and you run a mid-sized business, your biggest fear probably isn't just learning how to use the tool.
No, it's compliance.
Your biggest fear is regulatory uncertainty. You are terrified of spending $100,000 integrating an AI scheduling tool or a customer service bot, only to get slapped with a massive compliance fine when some new heavy-handed tech law is passed next year.
Precisely. And New Zealand's solution to that fear is what they call a light touch and principles-based approach.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, instead of writing heavy, sweeping new AI-specific legislation, like the EU AI Act, which is incredibly dense.
Oh yeah, the EU one is huge.
Right. They are relying entirely on existing laws, like their current privacy and human rights frameworks. They are also officially adopting the OECD AI principles, which are internationally agreed guidelines focusing on broad concepts like transparency, fairness, and accountability.
But I have to stop you there, because doesn't that sound like a massive cop-out?
How do you mean?
Well, is a light-touch regulatory approach just a polite political way of saying a small country is too under-resourced to actually enforce complex new tech laws against global monopolies?
I see.
Like, if an AI discriminates against someone in a hiring algorithm,
yeah,
and the law is just a principle, how does a principles-based approach actually hold up in court? Are they just waving the white flag here?
This raises an important question, right, about what effective regulation actually looks like in a courtroom versus what it looks like on paper. A rigid, heavy-handed AI-specific law like the EU AI Act might sound incredibly tough, but for an economic strategy entirely dependent on fast adoption, it would be a disaster.
Why? I mean, shouldn't we have tough rules?
Because technology is moving fundamentally faster than any legislative body can draft laws. If you create a rigid law today that defines exactly what an AI algorithm can and cannot do, that law is completely obsolete in 6 months when a new architecture is invented.
Oh, that makes sense.
A principles-based approach isn't a white flag. It's a strategy of agility. It means the regulatory framework is technology neutral. In your example of the hiring algorithm, the government doesn't need a new AI Anti-Discrimination Act. They simply use the existing Human Rights Act.
Ah, I get it.
The tool used to commit the discrimination doesn't matter. Whether it was a biased human manager or a biased neural network, the harm is what is illegal.
So they are regulating the outcome, not the technology itself.
Exactly. And more importantly, it directly addresses the psychological barrier, that perceived complexity, that is terrifying those 68% of SMEs into inaction.
Right.
If a local bakery thinks they need to hire a team of compliance lawyers just to use an automated inventory tool, they just won't use it. By leaning on existing consumer laws that businesses already understand, the government removes that paralyzing fear of the unknown.
But wait, this light touch regulation creates a massive vulnerability when we look at indigenous data. The report explicitly outlines how AI interacts with unique cultural heritage.
Yes, this is a vital point.
Maori communities in New Zealand are looking at AI with a mix of deep interest and serious concern. In Maori culture, data and traditional knowledge, which is known as Mataranga Maori, are considered taonga, which translates to treasures.
Right.
AI offers this incredible opportunity to amplify and preserve these treasures. But if the government isn't strictly regulating global tech companies, what stops OpenAI or Google from just scraping traditional Maori language data without consent?
And that is the exact friction point of this entire strategy. Because if a massive international tech company scrapes indigenous language data to make their global product better, but the indigenous community receives no benefit, no compensation, and frankly loses control of how their language is represented.
It's terrible.
That is a severe violation of data sovereignty.
It's like a multinational battling corporation dropping a massive pipe into a town's ancient sacred well. They pump the water out, bottle it, and sell it globally, claiming they discovered it, without giving the local village any stake in the factory or control over the resource.
That is a perfect analogy for digital scraping.
But what's fascinating is that they aren't just sitting back and worrying about the well running dry. They're actively building their own bottling plants.
Yeah, exactly.
The report highlights Tihiku Media, which is a charitable tech organization that built an AI-powered speech recognition model specifically for Te Reo Maori, the Maori language. And they achieved a 92% accuracy rate, which is just staggering.
It is an incredible technical achievement. And the how of that achievement is crucial. They didn't just scrape generic audio from the internet. They built that model using culturally contextualized training data gathered with the consent and participation of the community.
That makes all the difference.
It does. That is why it outperforms major tech companies who often really struggle to achieve that level of accuracy with anything other than dominant global languages.
And it's inspiring other indigenous communities globally too. We also see Kiowa Digital, an indigenous-owned media tech company. Their AI-supported software, VoiceQ, is actually used by Netflix and Disney for major media localization projects.
That's huge.
Yeah. And recognizing this global need for data sovereignty, they've launched CultureQ, a tool specifically designed to help indigenous groups revitalize their languages at scale on their own terms. And the government is backing this up. The Ministry of Maori Development, the Puni Kutiri, is actively exploring frameworks to support the appropriate use of cultural IP and prevent that commercial misappropriation.
It's a perfect illustration of what happens when you pair local cultural imperatives with advanced technological tools. And New Zealand is actively looking to pair this local focus with international capital.
Right, the investment side.
The report notes a $12 million joint research program between Singapore and New Zealand focused specifically on AI for healthy aging. They are also setting up a new Invest New Zealand entity to act as a one-stop shop to attract foreign direct investment. And they've reformed their Active Investor Plus visa.
Yeah.
They're essentially saying to the world, we want your international capital, but we are going to direct it at solving our local problems.
Which brings us to what might be the absolute most surprising detail in this entire document. I literally had to read this section twice to make sure I was seeing it right.
I think I know what you're going to say.
In the fine print, and then again explicitly in a case study within the report, the ministry openly admits that they actually used AI to write the AI strategy itself.
Yes. Under human supervision, of course.
Yes, right? They used it for research, to review literature, to generate ideas, and to enhance readability, with human officials rigorously reviewing and validating the outputs.
Right.
They did this specifically to, as they put it, walk the talk on AI adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this all mean? I mean, it's a bit mind-bending. Isn't it incredibly bold, maybe even reckless, for a government to use a tool that is currently under immense global scrutiny for making things up, like for hallucinations, to write its own national policy on that very tool?
What's fascinating here is the underlying behavioral psychology of that decision. It is actually the ultimate proof of concept for their entire smart adoption philosophy.
How so?
Think about the Minister for Digitizing Government, Judith Collins, signing off on this document. the government realized that the biggest barrier to AI adoption wasn't the technology itself, it was fear. It was those 68% of SMEs paralyzed by the perceived complexity.
Right, the fear of the unknown.
Exactly. So by using AI to write the policy, the government is executing a deliberate psychological play to demystify the tech. She is essentially proving to a hesitant bakery owner or an anxious mid-size accounting firm that AI is not some uncontrollable dark magic.
Yeah.
Nor is it something only Silicon Valley billionaires can touch. It's just an everyday tool, like a calculator or a word processor.
That makes a lot of sense.
By using it in a safe, transparent, and human-supervised way to draft a national strategy, the government is modeling the exact behavior they are asking the private sector to adopt. They are showing that you do not need to build the model to extract immense practical value from it.
It really is a masterclass in strategic self-awareness. When you pull all these threads together, New Zealand's AI playbook is remarkably clear-eyed. They looked at the global board, saw the multi-trillion dollar giants, and recognized they simply can't win the race to build foundational AI.
So they aren't even trying.
Exactly. Instead, they are aggressively focusing their resources on becoming the world's most capable users of the technology. They are finding innovative ways to protect their unique cultural IP, keeping their regulations agile so businesses aren't paralyzed by compliance fears, and leaning heavily into real-world, hyper-local applications in agriculture, healthcare, and beyond.
And that strategic self-awareness holds a profound lesson that goes far beyond national policy. We've just seen how a whole nation realized they don't need to invent the hammer to build a great house.
Wow, yeah.
So look at your own life, your career, or your business. What foundational tools are you stubbornly trying to build from scratch when you should really just be focusing on how to become the most skilled user of the tools that already exist?
That is a perfect question to leave things on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this exploration of New Zealand's unique approach to AI has given you a new perspective on how to tackle massive technological shifts, no matter the size of your operation or your bankroll. Keep questioning the world around you, keep learning, and we will see you on the next exploration.